Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning In Vitro call. Today is June 30th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by going to MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Definitely want to encourage those of you that are listening to this recording. I love that you guys are doing this, and I get emails and calls, and a bunch of you listen to this via recording, but we always love having you on live as well to join the conversation. So please, if you can ever make it there, that'd be awesome. Going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anybody who learned anything this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with, any questions you might have? I learned something this week that in all the time I've been doing this, I wasn't aware of, and I was wondering if, I don't know who all is on here, and I wanted to put it out there and see if anybody else had heard this, but one of the things that I learned is that in some municipalities, and when you are putting a commercial system in, a large commercial system, that one of the things that you have to take into consideration is chlorine removal. In some areas, you are not allowed to completely remove the chlorine from the building or the facility. You have to have some sort of a residual, which means that if you are using something like carbon, for example, to treat an issue in the building, then you have to consider either adding chlorine back to the water chlorine injector or putting some sort of a bleeding, you know, bleed valve on it to where it allows a little bit of water with chlorine back into it. But you're not, and I don't know, and maybe anybody on the call would know, but I don't know if this is a nationwide issue or if it's just, here and there on municipalities. But I wasn't aware that you had to maintain a chlorine residual in the facility. Has anybody else heard that or run across that on a commercial job before?
I've never heard of that, but it makes sense. And actually, I have somebody, my mentee, through WQA Mentor Program. She goes into facilities and basically looking for the safety to make sure that there's not Legionella in the system or how to stop Legionella from happening. But that kind of makes sense is, you know, sometimes in buildings, water is going to set in different locations, and they probably need that residual to make sure there's not going to be any sort of a, growth or anything. So it makes sense, but I don't know if it's nationwide. I'm not sure.
You know, what I love about this industry is that I've been doing this 24 years, going on 24 years, and I still find myself in situations where I learned something that is kind of one of those, I never knew that type things, you know. It's really crazy how much more there is to learn and just, you know, when you find yourself learning them. I mean, I love it. It's the other thing that is pretty cool is, you know, when you see some of the commercial buildings, some of the larger buildings, and you realize that the technology is really the exact same. No matter what scale it's at, what you're doing to treat the water is basically the same. You know, it's just at a larger or smaller scale. It's pretty interesting. So anybody else have anything before we jump into our topic? It occurs to me that our topic could be even a little related to what I was talking about. But I thought about this topic because I remember one of the very first, and this wasn't a commercial situation, this was way back when I first started in sales, way back when. And one of our very one of my very first sales that I had was in, I mean, it was in Michigan. We call it Michigan basements. I don't, Jen, you probably know what a Michigan basement is. It's a, you know, it's a basement. And I would guess that where you have these in other areas of the country, they do not call them a Michigan basement. But this was a house with old hard cast iron drain lines running through. A Michigan basement is like a basement that has no concrete floor. It's a dirt floor, and it's just, it's even the walls, the concrete walls are poured very unevenly, and the house is built on top of this. I mean, it's a basement, but it's not a basement you would ever want to use for anything. I mean, lots of those around Michigan, dirt floor, no sump pump, obviously, you know, no place to really drain. It's an old farmhouse. And I was so happy I made the sale. It was really good. It was one of my first, you know, one of my first times out by myself. And I completely, you know, I made the sale, and it was an easy one. I really loved the customers. And the installer got out there, and he said, "Where am I going to drain this thing? I'm like, can't you go into the septic?" He says, "These pipes are too old. I don't want to break into them at all. This is really, I don't feel comfortable breaking into them." I'm like, "What are my options?" Well, they could dig a dry well, and, you know, a dry well is one of those things. In Michigan, dry wells are legal and actually pretty common, but typically a lot of times they, you know, I didn't know what a dry well was. It was brand new in the industry. You know, what's a dry well? How do you dig a dry well? And they said, well, usually you have to get an excavator out there and, you know, have them dig a hole and do it, but we can't do this install. So I had to go back to the customer and tell them, you know, we don't have a drain. You know, it's, well, what do we do? You got to dig a dry well. How much does that cost? So I had called around, and, you know, an excavators were going to charge them like $750 to come out there and dig this hole. So as I started looking, I realized it's just a hole, and it's a trash can in the bottom, and you got to run this PVC and kind of connect it. So I actually went out there myself. Now, I was a 29-year-old kid, and, you know, without worries of injuring my back or anything else, but I went out there myself with a shovel on a Saturday morning, and I dug a hole in their side yard and put an old brine tank, drilled a bunch of holes in it, ran some PVC drain line to this brine tank with some pea gravel, and dug a dry well for them so we could put this thing in. But I always think about that, about how we weren't equipped. You know, that's not something our company did. We, now in that instance, because I was willing to go out there and work for a lot less than minimum wage, probably by the time it was all done, so that I could keep this sale. You know, I managed to get it. I mean, you can't expect people to do that, you know. That even, I think back to what I did, it was a little absurd, you know, why I went out there to do that. But then it was a good lesson for me, because I think now to the jobs that I wished I could do, you know, where the customers sometimes really needed what I was selling, but there was just not really, either there was no way to do it, or it was going to be beyond the scope of what we, when I say we, I mean either me or the company was willing or especially able to do. And one of the problems that we run into sometimes with salespeople is they want to sell, especially salespeople, you know, I think I've run into this a lot where, I mean, Jen and I, when we have brought salespeople into the industry, we generally bring them in without any water treatment experience. And so it's easy to look at something and say, yeah, we should be able to do that. That shouldn't be a problem. And to trust our installers to go do that, you know. The problem is, if you've never had experience doing it, you can actually do some pretty big damage, you know, or if something goes wrong, you don't know how to fix it. You don't understand exactly what you're putting in. So one of the things that we really need to make sure of is that we understand the limitations the skill level, the capabilities of what our companies are able to do. You know, so that we had a client recently that in Minnesota that worked with a accounting building just to put some atypical stuff in, some fountains. And the installer, I mean, it seemed like it would be pretty easy to just pull the fountains off and put them back on. But the installers had never done those before, had never done fountains, never cut in behind the wall, didn't understand the code, didn't understand the plumbing, and didn't understand how the water fountains actually functioned. They were sensor fountains and didn't understand, you know, what they did or how they functioned. And they, that our client went out, put them in, ran into some things they had never seen before. It was taking way too long to do. And fortunately that worked out okay, where the city manager or the supervisor that was there working on the project was really willing to work with our client. But that kind of highlighted the risk of sending out installers into a situation. And so there were a lot of failures in that situation. First off, the person that was, you know, that sold it, now granted it was sold at a time where there was the company actually had a plumber on staff and somebody that actually knew that stuff, and it took a year to close, and now the plumber that was on staff is no longer there, so there was part of that. But what should have happened along the way there is the salesperson should have, or management should have recognized, hey, the things have changed. We are no longer able to do this job. And frankly, the installer should have gone and looked at it and said, I don't know how to do this job. And there would have been some crow. It would have been bad, but not as bad as it could be to have a very public facility, take a look, and I mean, it could ruin reputation, and not to mention there could be some legal or financial damages. And to a small company, especially, those types of things, you know, one instance can be detrimental, you know, particularly if it gets out into the press or the media or something like that, you know, that can do some pretty big damage. I think when you're looking at even larger jobs, you know, I think knowing what your company's capabilities are really important as well. You can learn, you know, so this is one of the reasons it becomes really good to build those relationships with the plumber. I guess I've seen a lot of situations where, you know, a small little company is in a bidding war with a much larger company, and the smaller company may win the contract because, I mean, you find out later you're $10,000 less on the bid. That to me should scream action, because that larger company probably understands what all goes into doing those larger jobs, and they've done them. They recognize the challenges that may occur, or that will occur, and they price accordingly. You know, if you find that you're $10,000 below those other bids, yeah, you got the contract, but you're probably about to do a job that you're not going to make any money on. That may end up costing you money because of the amount of time and effort and mistakes and trips back and forth and a learning curve and those types of things. But having a relationship with the plumber, or, you know, whatever it is that's related to our industry, an electrician, a plumber, an excavator for those things, you know, building those relationships for when you need them And then pricing it in. I mean, look, we are allowed to get paid for the services we provide, and we price them in. But I think that in a desire to serve our customers sometimes, and I certainly have been guilty of this. I gave one example, but there have been multiple examples through my career that I have continued to be guilty of it, that in a desire to serve the customers, and maybe you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, I think we should be able to do that. I mean, I can tell you stories of when, you know, I broke a water heater for a customer one time trying to pull an anode rod because I didn't repressurize depressurize the water heater to pull the anode rod out. That's not something our company did, but I had always heard, oh, yeah, it's really easy. You can do it. And so I figured I'd be able to do it. And I went out and it cost me on my own credit card, you know, I had to pay an emergency plumber to go out and fix a water heater for her on a Saturday night because she had company coming. And I bit off more than I could chew. I didn't know what I was doing, you know. So if you are not 100% certain, be cautious about the promises that you make and just make very sure that the people, you know, that you understand what the skill levels of your company and frankly yourself are. Anybody have any other thoughts on that or comments or anecdotes? Jen, you have anything you want to add to any of that?
Maybe I can think off the top of my head. Stacy does, though.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stacy.
Not so much what my guys could or couldn't do, but I learned the hard way. Never try to put a bypass that's popped out back into a frozen bypass.
So explain what that means for people who may not understand what you're talking about. Tell me what explain the terms that you're using.
So I went out on an inspection check on an old Kenmore softener, and they have the bypass things back there. Well, the part that you would normally push in had actually popped out.
It's a plunger, right? So it's a on the cabinet models like that, it's a plunger bypass. So you push in or push out the plunger typically.
And it had actually totally blown all the way out because it was frozen. Well, tried putting that back in. Guess who got soaked in a 12-degree garage when I broke that ice?
Yeah.
Let alone, it took us a while to find a main shutoff in the house. Turned out to be inside in a closet in the house. So, which she was happy because when that would have thawed, it would have started flooding anyways. And this is a woman that worked 12-hour shifts. She goes, I'm gone most of the time. She goes, that would have destroyed my house. So she was okay about it, but I got totally soaked. And, I mean, it was like 12 degrees that day.
Yeah, I did one. I turned to shut the water off one time to try and bypass equipment. I turned a gate valve that I had no business touching. And, you know, this was before shark bites were around or before I knew how to sweat pipe. And I went out and turned a gate valve that looked rusted and old and tried to turn it off. And the thing the whole thing just disintegrated in my hand. I mean, the gate popped out and the innards came out and it's spraying water. We had to turn the pump off because that was the shutoff to the house. And so it was, you know, had to actually unplug the pump and because it was a jet pump too, and I had to unplug the pump, turn the pump off. And that was a Saturday afternoon. I remember I couldn't get a hold of anybody at the office to come out and get them water. And so my then father-in-law actually came out and helped sweat the pipe and fix that leak for me. I mean, I had to recruit my wife's dad to come out and sweat pipe for me to fix his customer's water. So, yeah. So there are those times. I mean, you know, like I said, in a desire to help people, sometimes you find yourselves there, but it's just really important. you know, we've talked about that, you know, how we've had that topic before on this call, you know, and on making sure that, you know, what are you as a salesperson, you know, how much service or how much should you be touching in there, you know, and so it does sort of relate to that. Know your own skills and your own capabilities. And, you know, and I can tell you I have learned a lot of hard lessons, much like what you're just describing, Stacy, because I thought that it would be easier. I thought I could do it and wasn't able. But I wanted to kind of also talk about making sure that you're not putting your service techs or your company into a situation that they, you know, everybody has to be able to say, we can't do that. And sometimes that can be a difficult conversation when you've already told them you could, you know, and, but that's, it's going to be a lot less problem if you, and yeah, you may have to deal with their wrath a little bit. You may have to deal with a you know, project manager who is upset about it, but you, they're, you know, the answer is, look, we, as the more we've delved into this, the more we've looked at it, the more we've explored it, we've maybe lost some people. We know, you know, the person who we felt confident would be able to do that is no longer with us. We are not capable. We do not feel comfortable taking on this project. And I apologize, but if we do it, we're not going to, I fear we're not going to be able to do it right. And it's going to be a lot more problems. And that's a hard conversation to have. Number one, on the surface, it looks like you're losing the money. In the long run, I think you're probably saving money in most of, in many of those instances. Number two, you know, you think that you're not having a, you know, maybe this customer is going to be upset with your company and never use you in the future. You know, that sucks too. But if you go in there and the company messes everything up and causes a lot of damage, they're never going to use you again either. And then I would rather justify we're over our heads here before we start to work than to try and say we never should have done this job. We were over our heads before we started it, you know. So any other thoughts on that?
You know, Kelly, as I'm kind of thinking through, I think one of the most common that I have seen is usually in startup companies, I'll have startup companies that call me and they'll say, you know, and it's common for startup companies to call and just kind of ask for advice. I got an 8 o'clock the other night, I had somebody call and say, I'm in a basement right now. What do I do? How do I handle this? In this instance, they had been quoted multiple times for UV. And the gentleman with the startup business was saying, he's like, I don't know what ultraviolet is. I don't know. I don't have a supplier on it. I don't understand it. And I said, it would have been the best treatment. They also did not understand, you know, chemical feed. But I think for some reason that township said that they had to have a UV. And I said, then I think you need to walk away, because if you don't understand the equipment and you're not there to maintain it, I've gone into homes where they have installers, they don't understand what a UV is. They read the directions on how to install it, but then they don't leave room to change the bulb. Like that. So ultraviolet, I think, is if a company is going to carry it, they need to understand it. They need to have a rep come out and explain to them what it is, how it works, the maintenance, and how to install it.
I've seen a lot of UV reps that come out and talk about that, but you know what I've never seen, Jen, is exactly that. That's always surprising to me that, you know, so next time you have a UV rep in your company come out, make sure you ask them about installing. Because you're absolutely right about that. I think about the UV presentations I've sat through, you know, for reps to come out and talk about all the features and benefits and sales and everything, you know. But you're right. They never talk about how to install it, you know, the direction it, you know, where to put it or, you know, the little things like leaving room to change the bulb, you know. I learned the hard way this last year. I went and changed it. You know, I couldn't figure out why this UV, I'd changed the bulb. And I mean, I had this, you know, I was working with a client, I went out and changed the UV bulb multiple times, and it would work when I, you know, before I left, I'd look at it, said you have 385 days left before you got to change the bulb again. I'd take a picture of it, it'd be fine. And a couple days later, start beeping again, saying bad bulb. And come to find out, what had happened is an older bulb had broke, or the glass casing that the bulb slides into had cracked down on the bottom. So the bulb that I was putting in was firing it up, and it was all submerged in water. So it lasted for about 3 days because it was actually submerged in water. It lasted about 3 days and would burn out. And I never knew any of that, you know. So you got to know, you know, spend a little time with YouTube these days and Google and all this stuff. You really got to know. There's tons of ways to teach yourself to do it, or to learn from other people. But Jen, you're right. If you don't know what you're doing, don't just wing it.
Stacy here. Not to necessarily bring up companies, but I'm actually a VQA certified installer. Yeah, no, I'm not going to install. But what that means is I've got the knowledge to figure out how to draw up the plan of where we're supposed to be putting it. They have a really good, basically, online class, you know, that you can go through and do and get your certification.
Yeah.
And it goes into the whole dynamics of how to place it and what all needs to be done. And I mean, it's the same thing installers go through, and we had all our salespeople do it also, so they would know basically what needs to be done before we ever send an installer out there.
So that's one of the things I've seen, a big mistake I've seen companies make is that they completely separate their service techs from their salespeople, their installers from their salespeople, you know, and that you really, exactly what you're saying, that cross-training there, Stacy, is exactly the way it needs to be done for that reason. Yeah. Go ahead. I lose you?
Oh, I'm good.
Nope.
Okay.
any other comments or thoughts? So bottom line is, in our enthusiasm to do the right thing and make the sale or take on the job, we need to be very cautious and make sure that we are 100% sure that we are able to do the job. That's the bottom line for this call. And that goes whether it's you as an individual, as a salesperson, as an installer, as a technician. But it also means being responsible to not put your company or your installers in a situation where they are out of their league either, where they're not able to do something either. And that has to be a company-wide goal, you know, a company-wide policy. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes the desire to bring the revenue in or the lack of knowledge on what you can and can't do, you know, will drive the decision to take on those jobs. But especially when, you know, when you beat that competitor that has the resources and has all the stuff out there, and you're really happy because you got the contract and they didn't. Well, there may be a reason, you know. So just be aware of that aspect of sales. Okay. So with that, everybody, cannot wait to – I'm going to give a little tease. There are some super, super, super exciting things happening within Motor Vitality and also in other aspects of the industry and business. And can't wait to share all that stuff with you guys in the coming weeks and months. But beyond that, we will talk to you next week, if not before. So please be safe, everybody, and take care.
Thanks.